Okay, well, I'm so glad to be here with all of you. I think I've met almost everyone, but not quite everyone. I have a bit of a soft voice, so if I get too quiet, just sort of signal somehow. Maybe Ian, you can signal. You can't hear me, okay? And I'll try to speak up. So I'm Beth Peterson. I live in Michigan, in the U.S., and I am an English professor. So I've been doing that for about 3 years. And before that, I worked with the Navigators, also in the U.S., and before that, I worked with books at Nav Press, so that's kind of my back history. I was really thankful when Steve asked if I could give a talk. So I always enjoy coming back to Elfheim. It's been a special place for me for many years, and I'm really glad to be here. So we've been talking about love. We've heard a couple of different talks about love. And today we're going to talk a little bit about like the reverse. So what happens if love goes astray? Can it go astray? When Steve asked me to think about this topic, the first thing I did is I sort of followed Twitter world. That's kind of my starting point for thinking. I'm pretty active on Twitter. For about a month, I paid attention to what were people saying about love on Twitter. So I just want to give you kind of a few phrases that I heard frequently used in Twitter in the last month or so. So one of the first ones commonly used in the U.S. right now is love wins. Love wins. That's especially used in West Michigan, where I live, where a guy named Rob Bell was the pastor, and he kind of coined that term, and now it's sort of taken off into all areas of society. So love wins. The second one, which we looked at a song with Steve, titled this, All You Need Is Love. Okay, so that's a sort of common, all you need is love. Another, love is a right. That's been a kind of coined phrase recently in the U.S. Love is a right. Love is enough and free to love. So those are the phrases that I heard repeated, okay? So as I was thinking about these, I thought love seems to be looked at as a rationale in some of these phrases and a defense. So a defense for political views, a defense for actions, and an ultimate end. So the ultimate end is love. It also is looked at as static, so sort of an unchanging thing, as wholly good, and as a way to chart our course. So these are the things I was seeing as I was just paying attention. So as I mentioned, this morning we're going to look at the question of, can love go astray? So is it right that love is wholly good always? Is it a rationale, a defense? Is it always an ultimate end? Or are there ways that love can kind of take the wrong course? So this talk's going to have three parts. First part is the question, can love go astray? We're going to look at that. Second, and the second kind of suggests my answer to the first, but if so, how? How might love go astray? And then the third, what do we do about that? So if love can go astray, what do we do? So those are kind of the three things we'll talk about. But before we get to that, I want to tell you a few stories. So I was a wilderness trip leader for several summers on a place called the Flambeau River in Wisconsin, the River of Flame. And it's this beautiful, remote river, more remote than Chulden, actually. You can only get in and out of the wilderness there by canoe or kayak, so there's no way to even hike in because it's too far. And so I led, for 5 summers, I led trips of kids, students, in canoes or kayaks, so boats, down this river. And one of the things that we did every day with the kids that we were working with is we asked them to come up with parables. So a parable, if you don't know what a parable is something in the world that points us to a deeper truth, okay? So some sort of situation or event or idea that can kind of point us to a deeper truth. So we might say, oh, the river is running quickly, but the rocks are staying steady. And maybe that teaches us something about how we might need to have sort of a steadiness, even when the world is going around us quickly. Another parable, which we'll maybe get to a little bit today, which you read in your quiet time, is the parable of this prodigal son, this lost son, okay? So there's stories that point us to these deeper truths. So I'm going to tell you three parables. They're all true stories. They all happen to me, and they all have to do with boats. when I was leading wilderness trips, okay? So the first story, I was leading a group of 14-year-olds on a wilderness trip. So that's Ellen's age, right, I think? So 14-year-olds. And we were going for 10 days canoeing and camping. This was a long trip. So we were, we'd been canoeing for maybe 5 days at this point down the river. And we got to the biggest sort of rapids that we hit. So there's, on this river, there's a pretty significant waterfall that you actually canoe over. So it's kind of the big day for everyone because lots of, especially when you have younger kids, lots of them fall out of their boats and there's lots of crashes and can become kind of disastrous. As you can imagine, 12 to 14-year-olds going over a waterfall in canoes. But so this day, so every time that I led this trip, I would try to take the best student with me, the best paddler. So somebody that was pretty good at canoeing, so that we would go over first, so everyone would hopefully follow us and not fall out of their boats. And if they did fall out, then we could catch them and help them. So I took this guy named Tyler, who is sort of a tall, really good canoer in my boat. And first thing we had to do is we had to strap all the things into our boat. So we had coolers of food, we had sleeping bags, we had tents, we had all our clothes for 10 days. So just everything, camera, water, it's all strapped into our boat. So we have this pretty full boat. So we go through we go over the waterfall, it's no problem. We make it to the kind of the other side where we've turned our boat around and we're waiting for the other kids to come through. And I noticed that our boat is starting to take on a little bit of water. I thought, maybe some of the rapids got in when we were kind of going over the waterfall. And then, you know, most of the kids are going by. Some of them have fallen out of their boats by this point. But I realized that it's taking on more water. And I say to Tyler, is there something wrong in the front? What's happening to our boat? So he moves some things around. And he says, did you know that the front of the boat is held together with duct tape? So there's tape holding together the front of our boat. There's a giant hole, and instead of fixing it, someone has just put tape over that. As he tells me this, he's shifted his weight too much, and suddenly I feel the seat go from under me, and the entire boat sinks 30 feet. So we lose all of our food, our sleeping bags, our tents, it's all gone. An entire boat has sunk. From a little hole. So that's the first story, okay? So, hole in a boat. So that was the first one I want to tell you, okay? Second story, also when I was leading these wilderness trips, we led trips in kayaks. Do you know the difference between a canoe and a kayak? In English, a canoe usually is the sort of, it's a long boat with two seats. There's no cover over it. Okay, kayaks are a bit smaller, and you sit in them by yourself, generally speaking. And you have a little skirt you wear, so the boat is completely covered. There's no sort of open space. You can't carry things in your kayak, unless it's a big kayak. So before we could take kids kayaking on the river, there was a rule that we had to be able to flip ourselves over in the kayak. So in case you get flipped over and you're underwater and stuck, you have to be able to roll yourself back over. All the trip leaders would go in a lake and practice rolling over in our kayak. So we'd flip ourselves over, which is pretty easy to get yourself upside down, but it's much harder to get yourself right side up. So the first time I did this, I flipped my kayak over. So I'm looking, I can see fish swimming by and sort of the foggy water and there's sand beneath me. And I realize I don't know how to turn the boat over. No one has really instructed us. So I'm just stuck sort of hanging underwater thinking I can't quite figure out what I'm supposed to do at this point. So there's this emergency cord you can pull and it will let you out of the boat and then the boat fills with water. So I pull the emergency cord and I get out and I go to the shore and I say, I don't really know what we're supposed to do. So the kayaking instructor says, oh, here's how you do it. You pull your paddle in this way and you kind of move your body in this location and then you are able to flip over. So I go back in, I empty my boat, I get back in the lake, I try it again. And I flip over and I can't remember. I can't remember if the paddle goes left or right or what happens to my head, where anything goes. I'm just stuck. I'm hanging there again under the water and I can't sort it out. And so I pull the emergency cord and I get out. And this happens to me 4 or 5 times. And by the 5th time, I just don't want to get back in the boat. I am done. So I just decide that I am too afraid to get back in the kayak for at least that day. That was it for me for the day. I had just inhaled a lot of water over the like several minutes of trying to figure out how to shift my kayak. So that's the second story. So the first one, a hole in a boat. Second one, afraid to get in a boat, back in a boat. And then the third story, the kind of final story of the parable I'll tell you, is a story on the same summer. We had a canoe trip that we were going in a place called the Boundary Waters, kind of famous in Canada. So there's all these lakes and rivers, and you can kind of canoe through them. So I was canoeing with a friend, Garrett, another trip leader, and we canoed this really long lake. We'd been canoeing it all morning. We got to the end of the lake, and what you were supposed to do is go down a river. But we got to the river, and it was dry, so there wasn't, the water was too low, so the water wasn't really flowing through it. So there was a tiny sign saying, portage your boat here. Does anyone know the word portage or portage? You heard that? What does that mean?
It's carry.
Yeah, carry. So carry, it means carry. So the sign just said, carry your boat here. So there's a little trail. So Garrett and I picked up our boat and all our things and started carrying it. We put it on our shoulders. It's kind of heavy. It's a canoe. And we carried it for a little way. And then we realized, well, it seems the trail goes on. So we kept walking. We walked over a tree at one point, up a hill and down a hill. Then we'd been walking 1 hour and then 2 hours and then 3 hours. We've been carrying our boat. After this sign, before we hit land. So it turns out that we had walked 8 miles by the time we were done portaging our boat. So that's longer than our hike yesterday, if you were on the hike. It's like about twice as long as our hike. We had walked carrying a boat. So the third story is about a wrong route, as you might guess, okay? We've taken the wrong route. There's a shorter route that we missed. So we ended up on a long route. Okay, so 3 stories. I'm going to come back to them in a few minutes, okay? So just kind of hold those in your mind. A broken boat, afraid to get in the boat, and taking a wrong route with the boat. So, okay, but before we come back to the parables, I want to kind of start with that question I introduced. Can love go astray? So I want to take us to a couple of verses. So if, I'm wondering if there's some people that can read some verses for us, okay? And the first verse is Romans 5:5. Anyone could read Romans 5:5. Yeah, great, thanks.
And hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us.
Okay, great. So what do we hear about love there in that little verse? What does it say? Where does love come from? God, yeah. God's love, he's poured out his love into our hearts, okay? By the Holy Spirit. Okay, another verse I'm going to take us to. Proverbs 4:23. Yeah, thank you.
Proverbs 4:23.
Yeah.
Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life.
Okay, great. Does anyone have a different version of that? I like that. That's my favorite version, but does anyone else, their Bible say something different? Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Keep and guard your heart with all vigilance and above all that you guard, for out of it flows the spring of life.
Okay. Great. Anyone else? Anything different?
Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life.
Yeah, are the issues of life. Okay, so there's a lot of translations of this. I'll read a couple more. This is kind of a hard passage to translate. So we've got, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Okay, everything you do flows from it. Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. It's the second version. Another version, this is the version Olaf read, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Okay? And then the version Lillian read, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. So even the NIV, kind of a famous Bible translation, has changed recently its translation of that verse. It's kind of been a verse that shifted a lot. So when I first heard this verse, I heard it when I had became a Christian recently after. I was like 15 years old, and it was in a dating talk, which is where I kept hearing this verse for a long time. And the impetus was, keep your heart from boys because they will ruin it. Guard your heart, keep it away, because they will do bad things to your heart. So that was kind of the kind of point of the talk. Which never left me, I guess. But the idea was that we sort of lock up our heart like in a prison, okay? And you keep it kind of far away, or at least that's the idea I got from the talk. And I never really sort of reconsidered this passage until a couple of years ago, several years ago, when I was studying theology. I did a little bit in looking at languages, both Hebrew and Greek, not a lot, but. As I started to read this verse, which I found was interesting, I realized that the words meant quite different things than I thought they did. So I just want to show you just a tiny bit of Hebrew here. You probably didn't realize you were getting a language class, but I'm an English professor, so there you go. So the word guard is the word mishmar, okay, mishmar in Hebrew. And that can be translated lots of ways, which is part of the reason that there's all these shifty translations. No one quite knows how to translate it. But the way it's usually translated is to actively keep or to hold tight. So hold tight, which is pretty different than when I thought of guarding. Like I thought of prison guard or, you know, somebody sort of guarding a big building, standing in front of it. But instead, the kind of main way that it's actually translated is keep actively keep. So actively keep or hold tight. The second kind of important word in that verse is heart, which can be either leb or lev, okay, it's sort of, that's either of those words. And in the Hebrew, this is actually true in the Greek too, heart doesn't just mean what we think it does. What do we think of when we say, talk about someone's heart? There's probably two things we think of. Emotions, or what's the other possibility when you say the heart? Yeah, the actual like pump that sort of keeps things going, okay? So, but in the Hebrew, the heart meant your feelings, your will, your intellect, sort of the center of who you are, okay? So it has all of this kind of deeper meaning, sort of your motivations too. Your soul, yes. So all of these things, your heart has kind of a much larger, larger orientation. And then the last part, so this word, it's kind of a hard word, but totsawa, is how you say that? You wouldn't necessarily know that, but that's the sort of wellspring of life section, okay? And the reason that there's sort of a water image in the verse, hence the flows, springs, you've got all this kind of water images. But the second part people struggle to interpret, and that, the section that you guys heard issues was sometimes it was wellspring of life, and that section has been translated outgoings, issues, and deliverance, that word sometimes means too. So if you kind of take that together, you realize, wow, this means, or I realized this means something quite different than how I had been kind of translating that. So rather than protecting your heart and locking it away because it's, you know, there's sort of this danger, the sort of new reading I had was kind of protect your heart from going stagnant, because it is the wellspring. You want to keep it alive and keep it, you know, sort of soft and pliable. So actively holding tight to sort of the center of who you are, because from that can spring life. So I guess there's kind of one point I want to make from these two verses we've read, and that is there is great potential in our hearts because God's love has been poured out into them. Okay, so there's great potential for God's love to be working through our hearts. However, there's another side. So two more passages that I'm wondering if a couple of folks could read. I have some volunteers for two more passages. Yeah, Sarah. So Jeremiah 2:13. Yeah, Emmy, Jeremiah 17:9. Great, thank you.
Jeremiah 2:13. For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living water, and dug out cisterns for themselves, cracked cisterns, and hold no water.
Their heart is deceitful over all things and beyond care. Who can understand it?
Okay, so we've got a pretty different picture of the heart and also what we run to. So I think what we can gather from these scriptures is that we have this possibility, great possibility in our heart, wellspring of life, but also the heart can be deceitful. Okay, so we have this other kind of possibility too. And how is the heart deceitful? And some one of the ways might be that we run to other things, broken cisterns. Does anyone know what a cistern is? What is a cistern? Can someone give that word for us? Yeah.
Like a well?
Like a well, yeah. A cistern is like a well. You're getting a lot of sort of water images here today, okay? But a cistern's like a well. So there's broken wells. What would happen with a broken well? Why is that a problem?
Letting that pollute the water?
Yeah, it could pollute the water. Why else might it be a problem?
Let's the water out.
Let's the water out. Okay, so it could be like the opposite of my boat. Instead of taking it in, it just lets it out, okay? So there's a lot of possibilities there, okay? So that's kind of getting at that first question. So can love go astray? Yeah, it seems like it. Okay, there's good possibility in our heart, good possibility with God's love, great potential. God's poured out his love into our hearts, but can we go astray with our love? Yes, we can misdirect our love. So the second question that I want to talk about is, if so, how? Okay, how can our love be misdirected? And this comes back to those three stories. There are probably lots of ways that our love can be misdirected, but I want to talk about three. And the first is wounds, okay? Hole in our boat. So when we found out that boat had the hole in it, my friend Brian had been the one that fixed it with tape. He loved tape. He duct taped everything. He was like a real believer in duct tape. And so he had like a backpack that was duct taped together. I wasn't that shocked when I found out it was him that had taped this boat together. And he was the boat guy. He was supposed to inspect all the boats. And so instead of fixing the boat, usually we put this thing called resin on it, sort of hard, that sort of seals cracks. And he didn't put resin, he just put tape. So I think we do that too. So I think sometimes we have wounds in our lives, and those can come either from life circumstances. Also, we see in 1 Peter 5:8 and several other places in the scripture, devil roars, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for those to devour. Okay, so sometimes there's evil and sin that causes wounds in our lives. There's lots of things. But that's one of the ways that our love goes astray. So when we have wounds, holes in our boat, sometimes we can't recognize love. Sometimes we look for love in the wrong places if we're wounded. And sometimes we miss the perspective on love. So it becomes all about our wound. So just as a little example of that, I sprained my ankle a few weeks ago hiking in Switzerland. And I came home and my ankle was really large. And I was watching my nephew Will for the week. He's 3. He just was so in shock that I had this like orange-sized ankle that he talked about it all the time. And like a month later, he's still talking about it. So someone came to our house this week and said, "Will, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And he said, "When I grow up, I'm going to sprain my ankle." That was his answer. So and then I told him I was coming to Norway, and he said, "Don't go." And I thought, oh, he's going to say, you know, sweetly, he wanted me to stay with him. And he said, "You're going to hurt your ankle." And I was like, you can't get over this idea that if you go somewhere else on an airplane, your ankle is going to be injured. But I think sometimes we do that with, like, wounds, you know, wounds in our lives, too. Like, everything in our life becomes about that thing that's hard. So instead of being able to love, and we've talked a little bit about love as being sacrificial and oriented outward, I think we'll keep talking about it this week. We can get sort of sucked in, so it's all about us and all about our wound. So examples of that, for instance, your friend lets you down, and so you don't want to love that friend again. You think, I'm done with this relationship. They've let me down, and so that's been hard. You have had some area of your life that's felt like you haven't, it's been inadequate, so you seek approval from other people. So you want to fill that area in your life, so you look for approval from other people. So, okay, so the first one is wounds or hole in the boat. A second way I think our love can go astray is through fear. And we're going to talk about this just really briefly, because I know Jez is talking more about fear soon. We'll go quickly. But one of the ideas I think that's key in the Bible is it says that perfect love casts out fear. So there is no fear in perfect love. So God's love has no fear in it. But I think for us, it can be quite easy to be afraid. And I think sometimes when we're afraid, we don't love. Instead, we self-protect. So instead of loving, we kind of sort of shut down or distract ourselves. So I think there's lots of ways this can look. I was sort of thinking about this 17th century Descartes statement, I think, therefore I am. And I think sometimes, actually, for some of us, we become so focused on thinking that we shut down the sort of other aspects of loving, sort of being a whole person, engaging our whole heart. I think that actually that's sort of our, in some ways, our modern culture has pushed us in that direction of thinking rather than loving fully. So rationality over love. Or sometimes we can get hurt, and so we don't love again, okay? We're afraid of loving. We're afraid of what love might do. So I think fear can get in the way of love. And then the third thing, the third way I think that our love can be misdirected is by taking the wrong route, okay? So that 8-mile route, like I took. So I have a few scriptures I'd like to read. So I could have three people that could read passages? Maybe three different people? Yeah, thanks. Could you read 1 John 2? Someone else? Yeah, 1 Timothy 6:6. And then one more person. Great. Could you read 2 Timothy 3:2? So these were in our passages. So 1 John 2:15-17, okay? Okay, so we have our next passage. Yep.
1 Timothy 6:6. But godliness with contentment is great gain.
Okay, godliness with contentment is great gain. Okay, great. And then who's our third? You are the read.
2 Timothy 3:2. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful.
Okay, great. So we have, in a couple of these verses, we have ways that our love can go astray, right? Being maybe lust or lovers of money. And we have kind of reverse in that discontentment is another way that our love can go astray, okay? Not being contented with what we have or what we've been given. So we have all these possibilities, and there are many others. And I was talking to Bern yesterday about the idea that sometimes we give our lives to things that don't last. And I think sometimes we give our love to things that don't last, too, okay? So that's where our love often goes astray. Sometimes it goes astray by actually actively choose things that are against love. So lust, for instance, it works against love. And sometimes we actively choose that. But I think also we choose things that are just temporary to place most of our affection and interest in. So some examples I thought of were addiction. So sometimes we can become addicted to things. Sometimes entertainment, which can be good in small small doses, but sometimes entertainment, we can choose entertainment instead of interaction with people, instead of love, okay? Instead of God, instead of feeling. So I think there's lots of possible wrong routes. So that's our second question. So can our love go astray? Yes. How? There are many ways, but wounds is one way, fear is another, and wrong roots is a third. So then the final question I want to talk about is, what do we do about misdirected love? Okay, how do we turn course if our love is misdirected? How do we get back on track? So I want to read you a fairly lengthy quote by a guy named James K.A. Smith, and he's a theologian. He's a theologian at Calvin College, which is where I live, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He has a book on love, Theology of Love. So I'm just going to read this to you. So he says, discipleship, we might say, is a way to curate your heart, to be attentive and intentional about what you love. So discipleship is more a matter of hungering and thirsting than only knowing and believing. Jesus' command is to align our loves and longings with his, to want what God wants, to desire what God desires, to hunger and thirst after and crave a world where he is all in all, a vision encapsulated by the shorthand, the kingdom of God. Jesus is a teacher who doesn't just inform our intellect, but forms our very loves. He isn't content to simply deposit new ideas into your mind. He's after nothing less than your wants, your loves, your longings. So we curate our hearts, he starts by saying. What does it mean to curate? What is a curator? Does anyone know that term, curate?
Or even what? Yeah.
Yes, so a museum curator is the person that selects what pieces will be displayed. So every museum has a curator. So it's the person that's what they do. They select what will be displayed. So that they do that carefully, right, and thoughtfully. So they're thinking about what people will be seeing. They're thinking sort of, they're very mindful, a curator is, of what they're selecting, because it has to be representative. So for instance, in the London Natural History Museum, they have only so many spots for birds, okay? But they have a lot of birds, a surprising number. But they're only taking one representative bird, okay? So they have to kind of curate. They have to think through what will be the best representation, okay? So they're curating. So to curate means to be attentive and intentional, okay? So to attentively and intentionally think and sort of carefully think about what we love. So I think we often don't think about what we love, actually. We just love, and we don't stop to pay attention to what do we love and why do we love that thing? How do we love? So I would say we're attentive and intentional about what we love, and we can begin that by reframing the question from what is love to who is love, because love is the person of Jesus, as we heard about a bit yesterday, okay? So we can start by thinking that love comes from God. So there's a few things I'd suggest we can do to redirect our love. So the first is we can consider what we love. And what I would suggest that you do is make a list. Make a list of what you love, and be honest on it. Be honest about what you love. Even if you love something and you think, maybe this isn't good for me to love, still make a list. It's good to take stock of where we're at, and consider. So the second thing I think we should consider is what gets in the way of real love. So we've talked a little bit about real love and what it is this week. We'll continue talking about it. We have lots of time. But even today, just looking at love as a wellspring. So there's a wellspring of water that's sort of springing up and flowing, a river, as opposed to that kind of dry cistern, so something that's shut down. So what makes our hearts shut down versus what opens them up to God and love and other people? So considering that. And then the third thing I would say we consider is reality. And reality is what God says about love. So reality is his word on love. And I just want to give you a couple of verses. I'm just going to read real quick. Just realities related to those three ways we misdirect our love. So we sometimes misdirect our love through wounds. Psalm 147:3 says he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. Okay, so he's the one that binds our wounds. We sometimes go with fear instead of peace. Jeremiah 14:27 says he gives us peace instead of fear. Okay, so he gives us peace. And then in Jeremiah 24:7, he gives us a heart to know him. So sometimes we choose the wrong route. Well, we don't have to. He gives us a heart to know him and the possibility to know him. So in your quiet times, you looked at the parable of the lost son, which we're not going to talk about here long. But one of the things I really like that about that is that's a story of misdirected love. So the prodigal son tries to love all these other things, okay, that aren't good for him. They get in the way of life, true life. But the great thing about that story is that his father is ready to come to him and to run to him, actually, at any point. And one of the things I've thought about with that story is that what it suggests is that we are not too far, or we are not too broken, or we're not too late for love. So he's not too far, not too broken, or not too late. So love is eager to run to us, and it's radical and it's sacrificial, and that we can take part in that love and think about that love. So the last thing I just want to mention real briefly, I'm going to turn it back to the boats where we started, okay? So if you're in a canoe and you're going the wrong way, so you find yourself misdirected, there's lots of things you can do. One of the things that you can do is this long, gradual stroke to kind of get yourself out, okay? So you can kind of gradually turn the ship around. You can paddle backwards, not very effective, but sometimes you can do that. You can turn your paddle around, paddle backwards. But then the last thing that we talked about, we taught our kids to do, was what we called a jam paddle. And it's you just stick your paddle in the water, you jam it as far as you can down, okay? And so you just sort of throw it into the water. And that's sort of your last course. You have no other plan, but it will stop your boat from continuing to move in the wrong direction. So I think sometimes we have all of those options in front of us. So if you feel like you found yourself moving in the wrong direction, and that could mean any of those things we talked about. It could mean lust, an active movement, or shutting down your heart. Or it could mean you're just not pursuing God. You're forgetting about him. Or you're not actively loving people. Your life has become about yourself, mostly. I think you can take big strokes and course correct, or sometimes you can just jam your paddle in and say, okay, I'm just going to stop and figure out what's happened, and why is my love misdirected? And I think God is ready to meet us in sort of any of those places and turn us around eagerly. So, okay, so I wanted to give you a few discussion questions, and then that will be it, all right? So three discussion questions for your groups. So the first question is, what do you love? So what are some of the things that you love? Things, people, whatever. What do you love? The second one, I'd like you to think about either a current or recent situation, if you can, okay? So current or recent situation, and the question is, what causes you to shut down or turn from love? So if you can be specific here, and think about something specific that's caused you to shut down or turn away from love, okay? So what do you love? What causes you to shut down or turn from love? And then the last question is, what do you think about this idea that discipleship isn't just about knowing, but about loving? So James, discipleship isn't just about knowing, but about loving. James Smith said that discipleship's more a matter of hungering and thirsting than knowing and believing. So what do you think about that? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Is discipleship more hungering and thirsting than knowing and believing? So that's the third question.
Just repeat the third question.
Yeah, sorry. So what do you think about the idea of discipleship as not just a matter of knowledge, but of love? I'll frame that one more time. James Smith, that long quote I read, the theologian, he says, I'll read this to you. So discipleship is more a matter of hungering and thirsting than knowing and believing. Do you agree with him? Do you disagree? Why not? What do you think about that? So that's the third question. So